Thinking Small, How New Zealand Tried to Squash Auckland. Thinking Small, How New Zealand Tried to Squash Auckland. A couple of weeks ago we blogged about the paradox of retrenchment in the face of growth. We wrote about how it was practically an orthodoxy some 40 years ago that the populations of Auckland, and of a New Zealand of little more than 3 million, were not going to get much larger. And how, for that reason, the government could give up on planning for the next million the way it had previously done. And how, strangely enough, even now that we have twice as many Aucklanders and 5.1 million New Zealanders within our shores, and a huge catch-up required, investment to deal with past and future growth is actually being cut back by the Auckland Council. In this post we're going to dive a little deeper into the specifics of why New Zealand seems to have such a problem with planning for the growth of Auckland, its largest city, in particular. Auckland at full stretch in 1977, Professor John L. Roberts, head of the School of Government at Victoria University of Wellington, wrote, of Auckland's growth, that, there is widespread uneasiness about this concentration of political power away from Wellington. It is now a political orthodoxy that something must be done to curb the growth of Auckland. A 1975 campaign advertisement by the National Party, victorious in that year, tapped into feelings of unease about both urban growth in general and immigration in particular. 4. Immigration was one of the factors that was fueling the growth of the cities, Auckland above all. In the advertisement, online in its entirety at NGA Tonga, an inflammatory anti-immigration cartoon is followed by a more reasonable chat delivered by Deputy Leader Brian Talboys, about how the cities of New Zealand are becoming overfull. By which, Auckland was chiefly meant. The mood of the times was captured by the title of a book of essays published in 1977, called Auckland at Full Stretch, in which the foregoing quote from Professor Roberts appears, at page 261. Cover of Auckland at Full Stretch, reproduced for purposes of critical review. And yet, to reiterate, Auckland is now twice as big as it was then in New Zealand, of course, on 5.1 million. It seems that Auckland, and New Zealand, were not so easily shrunk, or even put on pause, after all. ISS True Color Photograph of Auckland, NZ, September 2015. Image courtesy of the Earth Science and Remote Sensing Unit, NASA Johnson Space Center. NASA Photo ID ISS 045E33579 taken September 25, 2015 at 22:36 and 50 seconds GMT. North is somewhere to the top right. eol.jsc.nasa.gov/search-photo/photo.pl. Mission equals ISS 045 and role equals E and frame equals 33579. Some of these points have been made already, in a general sense, in our earlier post. But what really sticks out, and what we're looking at today, is how the denial of growth in New Zealand also seems to have been bound up with a more particular attack of cold feet concerning the growth and planning of Auckland. Auckland, as it was planned oddly enough, prior to Wellington's change of heart in the 1970s and 1980s, we were planning for growth, for the next million nationwide, with a full awareness that much of that next million was likely to end up in an increasingly metropolitan Auckland. The heroic quality of any newsreel from the 50s or 60s soon makes it clear that such growth was not only anticipated, but welcomed. Newsreels like 1960s's Expanding Auckland, with its observation that, our most cosmopolitan city, lying between two beautiful harbors, is built on a ring of old volcanoes, but the explosive activity there today is not volcanic. The plans that were being made for future growth in those days were bold, visionary and transformative, enabling Auckland to expand without sacrificing quality of life or housing affordability. The initial designs for Auckland's downtown motorway junction featured tunnels and the preservation of sensitive areas of townscape. A 1959 design for the Auckland motorways in the area of Karanga Hate Road. This whole area would later be dug out for continuous motorway trenches. Street names in black, and the location of the erstwhile landmark King's Arms Tavern and its gardens in red, have been added to orient the present-day viewer. The background photograph is one of several photographs taken of a model prepared by the Town Planning Division of the Department of Works and Services, presumably of the Auckland City Council. Source: Sir George Grey Special Collections, Auckland Public Libraries, image 580-3916. The model nameplate is shown in image 580-3912. Panorama of a parkland area of Upper Simon Street now dug out for a motorway trench, but which in those days was to be spared by one of the tunnels shown in the model above. From Expanding Auckland, Pictorial Parade No. 98, Natonal Film Unit, 1960. The documentary, Expanding Auckland, promised that the Southern Motorway will sweep up over Broadway at Newmarket, go down under Mountain Road. A tunnel will take it beneath Simon Street, and it will come out in the Great Roundabout in Newton Gully. A parallel rapid transit system, which came to be known as Robbie's Rapid Rail after longtime Auckland City Mayor Doug Meyer Robinson, its most insistent champion, was intended to balance things out and take the pressure off the motorways. From Doug Meyer Robinson, Passenger Transport in Auckland, a report, Auckland Regional Authority, 1969, Crown copyright reserved, to be developed in stages, which would ultimately include the North Shore. Auckland's proposed rapid rail was to serve as the spine for future development along four congestion-free corridors. These drew their inspiration, no doubt, from the way that Wellington had developed northward after World War II along two electric railway corridors, one in the Hutt Valley and one in the direction of Porirua, Plimmerton and Paraparaumu via the Tawa Tunnels. The Auckland Multilinear Scheme as presented to the Auckland Rapid Rail Symposium, 1969, by the then chief planner of the Auckland Regional Authority, Frederick W. O. Jones. The logic of the multilinear scheme, also from Jones's 1969 Rapid Rail Symposium presentation. Both symposium diagrams reproduced with the permission of Engineering New Zealand. The Auckland Finger Plan or multilinear scheme, announced in 1969, was similar to one announced for the Western Australian state capital of Perth in 1970. This wasn't really a coincidence, as one of the two main designers of the Perth scheme, Dr. David Carr, had gone to Perth from Auckland, where he had previously been a high-ranking planner at the Auckland Regional Authority. So you could argue that Perth got its corridor plan from Wellington by way of 1960s Auckland. An illustration of the Perth corridor plan by the Australian academic Dr. David Hedgecock, reproduced with permission from Planning Ahead, to wait and see. However, as concerns over Auckland's growth mounted, both the rapid rail and the multilinear scheme were abandoned on the grounds that they either, A, constituted too much of an endorsement of Auckland's unbalanced growth relative to the rest of the country, or, B, weren't needed since Auckland wasn't going to get much bigger anyway. The argument tended to oscillate between these two positions, but the upshot was the same, namely, a shift from planning ahead to wait and see. Take for instance the following observation from Malika M. Latham, who succeeded Fred Jones as chief planner at the ARA and canned Jones's multilinear scheme on the grounds that it was too ambitious. M. B. Latham, Growth Alternatives for Auckland, in Bush and Scott, eds., Auckland at Full Stretch, at p. 41. Instead of investing in exhilarating schemes, Latham wrote, we should cross our growth management bridges if and when we came to them, and save money in the meantime. Latham, Growth Alternatives for Auckland, at p. 43. The quote is from David Eversley, Planning in an Age of Stagnation, 1975. Though Latham was echoing some of the opinions of UK-based David Eversley in his Planning in an Age of Stagnation thesis, which we mentioned in the last post, there is no doubt that he was also under pressure from Wellington to rein in Auckland's growth ambitions, which were seen as out of kilter with the rest of the country not only by the mostly rurally and provincially based National Party but also by Labour as well, not to mention the up-and-coming Values Party, later to be reborn as the Greens. Presumably the third polling Social Credit Political League also thought Auckland too big, in view of Professor Roberts' claim of a political orthodoxy on the subject. All the same, such cold feet weren't seen to the same degree in Australia and Canada, two countries to which New Zealand is often, otherwise, compared. In Australia, Perth's corridor plan went ahead along with the associated rail upgrades, one irony being that Auckland received Perth's cast-off diesel trains in 1993. As Perth went all electric. The Canadian city of Vancouver, another metropolis to which Auckland is specifically compared, rejected a proposed spaghetti junction very similar to the one that would eventuate in Auckland, in favour of investment in rapid transit and masses of apartments. Neither in Perth nor Vancouver, nor in their respective state and provincial administrations, does there seem to have been as much unwillingness to face the urban future as there seems to have been in New Zealand from the 1970s onwards. Thinking small in New Zealand, the rejection of urban growth continued to influence government policy and public attitudes for decades thereafter. For instance, the widespread mockery and condemnation of Rob Muldoon's Think Big schemes was a product of those no-growth times. Schemes roundly mocked, even though it's clear that at least some of Muldoon's schemes, such as the Clyde High Dam and the electrification of the North Island Main Trunk Railway Line, were by no means without value. Indeed, the expression Think Big has a rather honorable origin, in the form of the following inspirational quote from the early 1900s, make no little plans. They have no magic to stir men's blood and probably themselves will not be realized. Make big plans, aim high and hope and work, remembering that a noble, logical diagram once recorded will never die, but long after we are gone will be a living thing, asserting itself with ever-growing insistency. Remember that our sons and grandsons are going to do things that would stagger us. Let your watchword be order and your beacon beauty. Think big. Attributed to Daniel Burnham, 1864-1912, think big was mocked, quite simply, because, for whatever reason, growth, urbanization and development were no longer in fashion. In a similar vein, it's not possible to understand why people thought the 1991 Resource Management Act, with its general emphasis on putting a stop to things, all brakes, no accelerator, was a good idea, save against the backdrop of the idea that the age of growth and change had largely ended, or should be ended. Further evidence of the rather visceral anti-growth, anti-Auckland mentality that infused New Zealand's political culture in recent decades can be seen in the attitudes of Labour Finance Minister Michael Cullen, who hailed from a Dunedin constituency. To a Taranaki audience, in 1998, Cullen insisted that Auckland now sits atop the nation like a great crushing weight. In 2006, by which time he had been Minister of Finance for some years, Dr. Cullen was telling champions of Auckland rail electrification to make do with the bus, screenshot from documentary with playable link here. Tragically, by 2006, all the areas that were to be spared from the motorway downtown had been dug up for vast trenches, as the city's growth was addressed reactively. The same scene as was shown above in Expanding Auckland. This photo, and the next.